accession number 19777, reel 8.
Bill Norman, reel 8.
I was sent to York to cavalry barracks, and there was about 600 of us there. We were told by a sergeant major, and for the first time in my life I saw he wore a green beret. I didn't even know such things existed. I knew red ones did and black ones, but a green one. And he told us, he said, this, the commandos are based on discipline, and what we're looking for is self-discipline. He said, I don't care whether you're big or small or old or how fit you are. He said, we'll sort that out. He says, but if you have a CO's crime sheet, in other words, you've been in trouble, he says, forget it, we don't want you. He said, we only want men who are self-disciplined. And quite a few got slung out there and then. I got called in front of a Major Llewellyn out the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, I think he was. And I could see he was a regular soldier because he had a Indian General War, Indian General Service Medal, IGS. And he said to me, why do you want to join the commandos? I thought very quickly, because I think I'm the sort of man you're looking for, sir. And he says, he looked me up and down, and I'd made sure that I was absolutely spick and span, stamped my foot down when I went in to show that I was well disciplined, and I'd always been taught by old soldiers, when you go to a unit, first impressions are the lasting ones. Make sure that you do everything properly. And this I did. And then he looked at my record and he said, I see you as only a second-class shot. And I said, yes, sir, much to my shame. I said, I shot for the battalion, sir. I said, and we went out to fire our course with this new rifle, the number 4. I said, then the trigger lost its first pressure, and I thought I was good enough shot to shoot through the course without that. I said, but I was wrong, and that's why I'm a second class shot. And a smile came on his face, and he said, all right. A few days later, I found I was accepted. And I went to Wrexham, holding Operation Commando. First thing I had to do was to go to, on orders, CO's orders, to revert from sergeant down to private. They would not take NCOs. I was myself and a sergeant, battery sergeant major artillery, a fella called Blewett. And we marched in and the colonel says, right, do you voluntarily revert? Do you understand you will not get your rank back? And you may not be promoted while you're in the commandos. He said, yes. You're willing to do that? Yes. Right, well, when you leave here, take your ranks down. You are a gunner. You are a private. So off we went. And Blewett says to me, isn't it a bugger? I said, what? Is this having to revert? I said, well, you knew you had to revert. He says, yes, but do you realise what we've done? I said, no. He says, we've halved our pay in order to fight. He said, most of them would half their pay in order not to. It had never occurred to me, but it didn't worry me any. The only thing that bothered me was that your pension in those days was based on how long you'd served in the rank. And I thought, well, I'm going to lose a lot of money when I leave the army. But fortunately, they changed the system, and I didn't lose anything. We went up to Achnacarry in Scotland to do our training, and we heard terrible things about Achnacarry. what was going to happen there. When we got there, we were told, right, divide, split yourself up into pairs and find your pal. The smallest unit we have is me and my pal. And if you are number one on the gun, your pal will be number two. And if your pal goes out on a patrol and someone else is to go, he'll take you. And this was they worked, the way they worked. The smallest formation, me and my pal. Well, I hadn't got one. I was pally with everyone. And a chap came up to me and says, will you be my pal? And he was from the East End of London. And I says, yeah, okay. And a better person, I could never admit it. He was an absolute superb soldier. He was a very, very tough. He came from the East End of London. He didn't drink, he didn't swear or smoke. He gambled like anything, and he was full of fun. And I'm still pally with him to this day.
And his name?
Johnny Fox. He lives in Forest Gate in London. A real East End Londoner. He says, do you know why I picked you as a pal? I said, no. He said, well, one day, he said, we broke off for a naffy break. And I stayed in the room, and you were just going, and you said, are you coming up to the naffy? And I said, no, I've got no money. I said, well, I've got some, I'll get you something. When we got there, he said, you've got sixpence. He said, that meant that three apes for a tea and three apes for a rock bun. He said, and you shared your last sixpence with me. He said, and I never forgot that. I said, well, that's the thing we did in the regular army. I said, that's how things were. You never thought for a minute if you'd only got a little money to share it with your mate. Anyhow, he was a great pal and he stuck by me. We stuck together all the way through. The training, it was supposed to be tough and hard and all that, but I didn't find it all that bad, mainly because I was very, very fit. I was in the battalion cross-country running team. In fact, I considered myself the best runner in the battalion, although I never won the cross-country, simply because I'd injured myself and ran it with an injury. And then I got third, and I was a good shot. While I'd been waiting to go there, I got myself very fit. And after the training we did on the northwest frontier up and down those mountains, I didn't find the commando training very hard, really. Except there was a lot of novelties. Things like rope climbing, rock climbing, boat work. This was all hard stuff, and put it all together, it was a pretty rough course for men who were not used to that sort of thing, I should think. At one time, Tommy Muirhead, the famous Scottish footballer, came to visit us. And he offered one of his gold medals to the best recruit. So there were seven commandos, as we call them, training, each of about 60 men. And they had a competition among themselves to find the best one. And I won in our troop. So I had to represent the troop, and there'd be seven of us representing for the final. And I managed to get second in that. I think I would have got first, except at the time when they did the competition, I had the flu. I had quite a temperature. So That didn't do me any good. The other thing that I wasn't particularly good at was unarmed combat. At one time, just before this competition, my father was taken ill and I went home on compassionate leave. And in the meantime, all these fellas doing this competition were all shown how to do the sit-in strangle, which was a way of strangling a man from behind. And they were told that that's what they were going to do. You must not practice it, it's dangerous. When we did the competition, I came bottom on the sit-in strangle because I didn't know what they were doing. I had to memorise it. And in any case, they said I wasn't aggressive enough. And I could give them that because I wasn't particularly aggressive in that way. Put a gun in my hand and it was another thing. We did our training and fine. Quite a lot got RTU'd. Return to unit. The least thing you did wrong, they booted you out. The least thing, I mean, on self-discipline. If the sergeant or the corporal had to check you once or twice for being idle or slack or dirty or anything like that, you was out. You didn't get through. We finished our training, I think 6 weeks we did up there, back to Wrexham for another. So in all we'd done 3 months training and then we were on a draft. We went up to Greenock, got aboard a ship, set off for Italy. Well, I can't remember the name of the ship. I've been on it twice, but I just can't recall the name. And we went to Naples. And we got on a train across to Bari.
Which commando were you in?
Number two. The colonel had been Jack Churchill, the famous Mad Jack, but he'd just been wounded and taken prisoner, so I missed him. And now we had Colonel Finn, Ted Finn, a Rhodesian. Superman. They all were. We, an amusing incident was that when we got to Naples, all the kids were trying to sell us grapes, oranges, fruit, cigarette. And all the fellas were coming back with a cigarette. You know, look what with a bunch of grapes. Look, I got these for a cigarette. I said, well, you don't want to eat them. Why not? I said, you want to wash them first. Wash them in Condi's fluid, which we had to do in India. Oh, they all laughed at this, you see. And we got into a train, and they were just goods wagons. It set off, and the next day, there were no toilets on these trains. You could look along, and you could see a row of bare bottoms. All this fruit had taken its effect, and the only thing they could do was stick it out the end there and hold on to the bar across to save themselves falling out. And I reckon that line between Naples and Bari must have been the best fertilised railway line in the whole of Italy. We got to Bari and we went down, I think it was south, to Monopoli. And we joined number two commander. They asked us what we wanted to do, on what qualifications we had. And when they asked me this, and what are you? I said, I'm a sniper. So, I wasn't, but I said that. And they said, all right. And then they decided, well, we don't need any more snipers. We've got them. We'll put you in a troop. Have you any other qualifications? I said, well, other than mortars? Oh, yes, we need them. So I went into the heavy weapons troop. Now, the heavy weapons troop comprised of mortars and machine guns. But if they wanted anything else, like anti-tank guns, they would train them up from there. You were a normal troop, fighting troop, and then when mortars or heavy weapons were required, then you would revert to those. With no transport to carry them, you carried them on your back. And if you was carrying bombs, you carried six mortar bombs, which weighed 72 pounds, in addition to your own weight of equipment, which was would be about 50 pounds anyhow. So you were pretty well loaded. In fact, you were so well loaded that if you bent over, you fell over. And once you fell over, you had to get your mates to haul you to your feet again, because you just couldn't get up. Nothing happened for a while. We did training. The unit had just come off the island of Vis, where they'd been operating with Tito. And suddenly we're going on our first operation. We're going to land in Albania, just north of a place called Sarandi, in the bay, and we're going to land there at midnight. And we're going to go across to a place called Delvini, where there's a railway line. Sorry, not a railway line, where there was a road. Ambush the Germans, shoot them up, and then come out again. We set off on the landing craft, LCIs, Landing Craft Infantry. And we ran into a gale. And I read later, it's a wonder the boats ever got there. The sea was so bad. Every man Jack was sick, including the crew. But we did land at the right place. And I believe at the right time. We went ashore. And I was just a mortar number, carrying ammunition. And we set off up a valley, and we were contacted by partisans who was guiding us up there and got us lost. I was told, keep quiet, the Germans are up on the hills, don't make a noise, don't whisper. And this fella got himself lost, and suddenly he yells, let out a terrific shout, hey partisani! He was shouting for his mates, asking where he was. Of course, the Germans got, and they let rip with everything. And showers of tracer came down. And some of us were carrying plastic explosive, 50-pound boxes. And we wondered what would happen if one of these 50-pound boxes got hit. But they said, oh, well, you'll be unlucky if they go off, it explodes. It'll probably burn if a tracer hits it. And later, we had it demonstrated where they shot a Bren gun at some of this plastic, and nothing happened, just went straight through it. But it didn't make us feel happy. I was carrying mortar bombs, six of them. They weighed 72 pounds. And in addition to my own kit, it was really a bit too much, I think, for me, because if I bent over, I just fell over. And then I couldn't get up again without I wriggled out of the Bergen rucksack that it was in. And then two men had to lift it to get it on your back again. It was like loading a blooming mule. Anyhow, the partisani had got us completely lost. So there was nothing to do. It was only about an hour before dawn. So we just sat where we were and went to sleep. The partisan disappeared. I don't know what happened to him. When the morning came, we walked forward and set up our two mortars and spent our time building rocks around them. You couldn't dig, it was all volcanic mountains, but there was lots of where we were in the valley, there were lots of stones that had rolled down, and we built some sort of shelter as we could. And this went on for a day. And then Sergeant Priest, he said, "Oh, I've got a job for you." I said, "Yes, Sergeant." He says, "Would you like to go on the patrol?" I said, "Yes." So he said, "Right, go along to the head of the valley and find Captain McLaren, or Major McLaren, I forget what his rank was then." So off I went, and I saw a chap making some tea. And I said, "Hey, Jack, do you know Major Mac?" And he says, "Yes." I said, "I've got to meet him." He said, "Oh, he'll be along in a minute." Along came a chap, and all he had was a belt and a pistol and a pullover on and trousers and shoes, very sort of improperly dressed, no badges of rank or anything. He said, "That's Major Mac." I said, "Oh, is it?" I said, "Scruffy looking bugger, isn't he?" And he said, "Oh, he's all right." So I goes along there, I said, "Are you Major Mac?" And he says, I didn't know his full name. He said, "Yes." I said, "Oh, I've got to report to you. We're going on a patrol, sir." He says, "Oh, all right." Then he started calling this cook by his first name. I said to one of the other chaps, I said, "Who's that there, that cook?" He said, "Oh, that's a medical officer." He was a good medical officer too, and I'm friends with him to this day. However, we set off on the patrol. There was the adjutant, I think he was. There was Major Mac, myself, and a corporal who was a guardsman. I know had been a guardsman and a partisan. And they said, "Look, what we're going to do, we're going to go up to the Delvini, which is about 3 or 4 miles from where we are, and we're going to make plans to spy out on the land and plans to attack the place." So off we went. We're going across rather undulating, treeless country. Nobody seemed to tell us what to do, so I just said to the corporal, I said, "Look, corporal, I'll go forward and I'll get forward and then I'll wave you on and we'll leapfrog like that." So he said, "Okay." And off we went. And this went on all the time until we got about 600 yards from the bridge, the one we were supposed to actually blow up. And the two officers went forward and they said, "Right, stop there and we'll go and have a look." And they went off and they were away for about an hour. And then they came back and we set off back again. This partisan was a kid of about 14. And he didn't seem to want to have anything to do with us. And I gave him a bar of chocolate to try and get him talking, but he just took it and put it in his pocket. On the way back, we stopped for something else. And the captain, I think his name was Whitehouse or something, he went off. They were doing a bit more recce. A shot was fired. And this captain came running back and he says, "Get back quick," he says, "there's Jerry's." So we scooted back. And when we got our breath, we said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Well, I was sat there," and he says, "a big German about this big came and shouts, 'Handy Hook, Commando.' He says, so I pulled out my 45 and shot him. At about 50 yards. Well, this fellow was a renowned bad shot. So Mac started to take the mickey and says, "What? Guy, you shot him? Did you aim it?" "No," he said, "I shot him from the hip." "What range?" "About 40, 50 yards. "And did you hit him?" "Yes, straight between the eyes." Yeah. Every time we got back, Mac would say to the officers in his pals, "Hear about Guy. German, this big, 50 yards, one shot from the hip, straight between the eyes. It became a bit of a joke. So, a couple of nights later, I was on a patrol again. And we got lost again. And this officer says to me, I know where we are. Come with me. And we found a German. He took his pay book, and I took his Smizer, and he said, that's the one who I shot. It was dark, so I didn't see where he'd shot him, but I think he had hit him in the head somewhere. Anyhow, I had a Smizer after that, a machine pistol, which I kept. I had it for a long time, eventually swapping it for 200 cigarettes with an American. But not being a smoker, I gave them to my pals. I won't go into the details of the operation, but it started to rain, and it rained and rained, and I can't remember how long it lasted. I think at least a week. We'd gone there for a 44-hour job, dressed in summer uniform, and it turned very, very cold. We were frozen. Food wasn't coming through for a time. And we were soaking wet all the time. The troops on the hilltops, they got absolutely down, and they were all suffering exposure. Some of the troops were down to about three or four men. A troop would be about 60 odd. They're down to about three or four men. And all the rest just had to lie there. Their feet would swell, and they'd take their boots off, then they couldn't get them back on. And on volcanic rock, they were just marooned. However, things got better. The sun shone and their feet got better. The MO went round and treated them. And it was decided that the job that we were supposed to do couldn't take place because there was a German reconnaissance regiment in Delvini, and they had a certain amount of armoured vehicles and tanks which we couldn't cope with. So a Marine commander was landed. I think it was number 40. And we decided that we would attack Sarandi itself and take the port. And the way we would do it was to go over the volcanic mountains where it was almost impossible for anyone to go. We'd go the hard way and catch them instead of going down the road. However, I was out on patrols again, down the road. And this particular night, I remember, we had some partisans with us again. And they turned up, and I saw a chap carrying a brain gun, and a boy about 10 years old carrying his magazines. They all had communist neckties, and we didn't think very much of them. They were all communists, as I said, and they didn't seem to want to know much about us. We gave them the nickname of Zog's Wogs, Zog being the king of Albania, and Wogs, a good old army term for anybody who wasn't English. Or